When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewill.
Woo!
Kyle, wow.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome to She-Hulk.
Guess who's back?
Boy, it's a
Robbie's
big week.
Robbie's back. Guess who's back? Back again. Both of us, yes, are back. Robbie's back from Europe. Let's freaking go.
It's also great because our friend Matt over from MCU Direct has been making some She-Hulk 8 Mile comparisons. So I'm loving the Eminem thread through all of this.
I went on an Eminem tangent while I was in Detroit. So you got to do a little Eminem when you're in Detroit.
And, oh, yeah, sure.
So that's why it's in my head right now. There you go.
Nice.
But welcome back. How was your time in Europe, dude?
Oh, man. It was awesome. It was awesome for a lot of reasons, but maybe primarily because it was like 60 degrees every day, which is like a full 40 degrees cooler than it is in Austin every day right now. We were flying back in the other night at like almost 11 at night, and the pilot was like, oh, you know, it's a beautiful 95 degrees on the ground, and I'm like... Welcome home. Back in Texas, baby. Yeah, it was off to put some stuff out either on the Slack or online to show people some of the stuff we saw. But I was telling you earlier, it's unreal. If anyone's listening, I know we have some listeners in Europe, and one of the things I'm jealous of, I've got some of the folks I was meeting up with live over there, and I'm just jealous of how easy it is to get to so many things. So people just get to see so many different countries and so many different beautiful things within those countries. And so if you're one of our listeners that's in Europe, you've maybe seen the Swiss Alps and been over there and hiked. But we got to do that for the first time. People that have listened for a while may know Candace and I are big hikers and have done a lot of that. We hiked the Appalachian Trail at one point. But neither of us have ever really done a ton of hiking abroad. Candace has done a little bit more than I have. And man, it was just
some of those pictures legitimately don't look real.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it was a green screen. I didn't actually go anywhere.
Oh, so I'm okay, gotcha.
A little insecure now, but
the CGI was a little off. The CGI was a little off.
You know, you've got
on your mountains. And I got an eye for it, so I caught you. I didn't think it looked real.
It was weirdly nostalgic from a podcasting front. Because, like we said on the last episode, that's where this all started. And Candace and I attempted, maybe this is the story that I'll share in closing out my European recap. Candace and I attempted to record a Comics Corner episode. And we'd been traveling kind of all day. We started out in Amsterdam. There's a direct flight from Austin to Amsterdam now, which is really great. And we spent a couple days there, and I worked a little bit remotely, and then we went on to Switzerland where we were going to start the hike. And at the end of the day, we were just kind of exhausted, and so we had decided we were going to get up and record first thing the next morning. And I woke up the next morning before my alarm that I had set for us to do our kind of morning coffee recording to a legitimate marching band, like outside of our window. Like we filmed a video that I think Candace put in the Slack. But the funniest thing is what we were going to record was the second installation of the Comics Corner readings for Thor Love and Thunder, which is obviously way late now, but is sort of going to wind up coinciding with the Disney Plus release there. And so it was really funny because the song that was being played was Sweet Child of Mine.
Yes, I noticed that.
But in like marching band format.
It reminded me so much of when Peter goes to Europe and Far From Home. Remember he's in the jail in the Netherlands and they're like, oh, welcome by again. That's what it reminded me of, like that kind of marching band.
It was, that's what I was telling. I actually made several Far From Home references to Candace, unsurprisingly.
Of course.
But Candace was already awake and she said that I think for her watching me wake up and jump like 3 feet in the air when the marching band started playing was probably one of the highlights of her trip. But yeah, it was a nice full circle friends from work moment. And yeah, again, while I was over there, got to watch the screeners for She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And have not gotten to talk to you about She-Hulk yet.
Yeah.
And so that makes today even extra exciting.
We're back. In some ways, we're back.
We're back.
Better than ever? Question mark. I am ramped up for this next season of Friends from Work.
I was talking to our friend slash manager Pete today, and he was asking me how things had been on the trip and how things were going. And I was like, man, things were great. Things are great in large part because I love She-Hulk and I'm really excited about this next era. But maybe even more importantly, Kyle loves She-Hulk. And there are a few things that are more fun for me than a hyped Kyle. And just so people know, you know, even behind the scenes, not just on this episode, I feel like your enthusiasm level has been at kind of like peak levels around this show, which I really love.
I think so much of it has to do with the expectation thing we always talk about. I didn't have a super high bar for this show to clear. So when it like way hurdled that bar,
yeah,
I was just blown away. And I want to keep a lot of today focused on just the first episode because that's
right.
All people have seen. But I would almost argue that I felt as good about each episode of the four as I have for any Disney Plus series. Like the peaks and valleys that we felt in certain series like Hawkeye or Miss Marvel, I didn't feel at all. And so who knows? Like those could be coming. Maybe a new director takes over for episode 5 and it just feels totally different. But I have so much to say about the show in general. And I can't wait. I can't wait. You're not wrong. I am very stoked on it. So I've been keeping this passion inside other than blowing you up on a few texts, but I knew you were busy. You know, you were hiking, but so you wouldn't respond for a full day. So I'm like, all right, well, I got to say this to somebody and no one else has seen it, but I freaking love it. What do I do?
Well, and if folks haven't seen it yet, Kyle did post his reactions to the whole kind of first four episodes, spoiler free, obviously, online, so you can find those on our socials. My kind of final comment globally before we dive into episode one specifically is just that I legitimately forgot for a little bit, in part because I was kind of disconnected from Marvel Twitter and everything, that this is not a 6-episode series. And so when they sent the four out, I was like, you know, I kind of didn't like that with Moon Knight because it feels like I like being able to look forward to new stuff, and I sort of hate that it takes me 4 weeks to get caught up with our listeners, or for our listeners to get caught up with us, however you want to look at it.
Sure.
And then I was thinking about it, and I was like, wait, this is not even
We're not
half
halfway
of the series. And And that makes me all the more excited, one, because of the style of the show, which people will kind of get as we get into it. But also, like, it just makes me really encouraged, because that's the one thing you and I have always talked about, is like, maybe this, there are times where the six-episode format has seemed to work well. I think it probably worked best for Loki, question mark. But largely, I feel like it's done more harm than good. And so the fact that we're getting a show that content-wise I'm so excited about, format-wise I'm so excited about, and that it's got a number of episodes that feels like right in the sweet spot that we've always talked about, just gets me super, super amped. It feels like, in multiple ways, this show is doing a lot of what I loved about WandaVision. And that is high praise.
I think more than ever before for me, I felt really nervous creating that TikTok video, because this was the least I'd ever known how other people were going to react. With like Thor, you and I were at the premiere, so you could at least feel the buzz on the way out and overhear people talking. And same with some of the other screeners, you know, we at least get a feel at the theater. And then with the shows that we got early, I always had you to talk to. So at least like I could get a gauge on how you felt. And then, okay, is that going to be a concern? Blah, blah, blah. You'd bring up things I didn't think of. This, because you're in Europe, I watched the four. I thought it was like amazing. Like very good. I can't sell this enough. Like very, very good. But then you were gone and you actually hadn't seen them yet. And then I didn't know who to talk to. No one else I knew had seen them. And nothing was online, right? Because the social media embargo was not that night. It was like a week delayed. So I spent the last week thinking about my review to be like, I have no idea if I'm going to put this out and every other critic's going to be like, wow, this is the worst show they've made. I truly didn't. So I was like, I think I even tweeted, wow, I am really anxious to see what the other reactions are, because I loved it. So I went out there with a genuine take before other people, and it seems like my opinion has fallen into the vast majority of other critics' opinions as well. So that's reassuring for me.
It is nice.
Okay, so let's get into the episode specifically. If you're just finding this podcast, please rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe. It makes it easier for this podcast to show up on your phone. I think we are at 497 reviews on Apple, so I'd love to get that over the 500 mark. So three of you who haven't done it yet, go on there, click 5 stars. Let's go. Get us over 500. And then you can follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. And that includes Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. And then check out the FFWpodcast.com, and we have all kinds of fun things on there.
And if you heard me mention a Comics Corner episode earlier and you have no idea what I'm talking about, that is an example of a bonus episode, some of the bonus content that we have over on Friends From Work Plus, which you can get on Patreon or try out for free on Apple Podcasts. There's a lot of fun stuff going on over there. We've had a lot of bonus episodes kind of from all over the place, a lot that I thought were really fun. So check that out if you're curious. We'll have some fun She-Hulk stuff coming up there and a lot of other things as well.
Okay, I have waited weeks to say this, but Robbie, let's dive into She-Hulk episode 1.
You could be an Avenger.
Oh, I'm not a superhero. That is for billionaires and narcissists and adult orphans for some reason. Is there anything more depressing than dating in your 30s?
Yeah, this is the best date I've had in a while.
Oh.
Should we split some fries?
Let's get those to go.
All right, Kyle, She-Hulk episode 1. This is going to be called episode 1 for now, because with the screeners, we don't get the titles. There was a list of titles that was revealed / leaked that seems to be pretty accurate, but here at Friends From Work, we do not traffic in rumors and leaks.
So true.
We traffic in cold hard facts. And
cold hard. I mean, this is an attorney show of all things. So cold hard facts only.
Evidence based. So as of now, since we're recording this prior to the formal release, we're going to go with She-Hulk Episode 1. We'll come back with the titles once they're being released. This episode was written by Jessica Gao and directed by Kate Corot. I think I'm saying that correctly. It stars, of course, Tatiana Maslany, Mark Ruffalo.
Ginger.
Oh, yeah. Gonzaga.
Yeah, let's go.
There it is. And a little glimpse at Jamila Jamil. There are a lot more cameos where those came from, but those are for future episodes. For now, let's jump into She-Hulk Attorney at Law, Episode 1.
Okay, big picture before we break down the nitty-gritty. I think my favorite thing about watching these first four episodes, including this first episode, but you'll get a bigger taste of it as we go along. The show itself, Robbie, is so self-aware.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I had two friends who are casuals that are not excited about the show. Literally last night they texted, is there any chance that She-Hulk is just terrible? And my other friend's like, oh yeah, it's totally gonna be terrible. And I was like, hey, I've actually seen the first four episodes and it's fantastic. And they're like, what, really? And we got down to the bottom of it, and their main contention was that some of the advertising looked funny and the name Attorney at Law is cheesy. And I'm like, that's the thing though, guys. That's what makes it so genius, is they know that. How else can I explain this? The show is almost satirical in nature. Like, it's aware of the goofiness and the cheesiness and what it's like for a giant green person to go into a club bathroom, right? Like, they get all of that, and that's what makes it so unique, fresh, and special to me. I'm not explaining that perfectly well, but it's like, it's just got such a great tone. Like, Miss Marvel was fun because it was so sincere, right? And this is almost fun because it's the opposite. This is fun because it's insincere, because it's irreverent. And it realizes what it is. Like, it knows it's goofy. And I love it.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, I mean, and that's something that I talk with Candace about all the time. It's like, if you, now I think there's a level of taking that too far, where, you know, you and I talked about being worried that at some point this would just pull you out of even caring about the story. If all it is being hyper self-aware and super meta, like, does it just kind of lose meaning? And that's not the case here at all. I think it's the perfect balance of being able to poke fun at itself, being able to kind of playfully poke fun at things within the MCU. I mean, the Captain America virginity joke that's going through this first episode, like, it's all, it feels kind of Deadpool-esque to me, but with a very different tone. And that's important, because the thing about
it's not as cynical. It's not as cynical in tone.
Yes. And it's not as like Monster Energy drink in tone. Like, I think there's like a little bit there. It's actually almost the exact opposite, because Deadpool, and Candace and I just recently rewatched the Deadpool movies and I laughed a ton. I think those movies are actually really well done. I think if they err a little bit on the side of sort of a certain brand of hypermasculinity. And I kind of love how much this swings in the total opposite direction. And you're right, it sort of gets rid of some of the grading parts of that.
Oh, I have so much to say, Robbie. Yes, I'm so excited to be back. Oh my gosh, it's good to hear your voice. And it's good to talk about this stuff with you. This feels like so fresh to me for some reason. I feel like the good old days right now.
I love that.
I need to give this disclaimer too. I am not just a fanboy for a fanboy's sake. Our audience knows that. If you're new, you should know that about me. You know that, Robbie. Like, this podcast was formed because we are excited and we love the MCU, but we are not unwilling to call out things that we don't love. We did a whole episode literally a week ago reflecting on Disney Plus, saying that there are some things with Disney Plus that have fell off. Like, just literally a week ago. Go back on the feed, you'll find it. And so when this blew me away, I think I was even more ecstatic about it because I'm coming out of the context of that episode. And I think in some ways, a show like this is a perfect prescription to what I was talking about.
Yes.
Like, let's just go totally zany and different and understand that we know what we're doing. You'll get this a lot more in some other episodes, but how about like even the first line where she's like, okay, listen, I'm going to tell you the origin story because otherwise you're not going to pay attention to this lawyer show. And it's like so meta because it's a commentary on like, that's true. We're going to want to know, how are you a Hulk? But also it's kind of like a meta commentary on how she as a character wants to get the Hulk part out of the way. So like on multiple levels, a little line like that comes right across to me like they really know what they're doing.
Right. Well, and did you see the interview that came out?
I did.
Think today?
They were going to save that scene.
Right. For episode 8, I think.
Which in a way would have been very similar to the same Disney Plus path, right? Like go back in time, revisit the emotional part of it, the pre-finale, you know?
Which and I love that. One, I love that they basically made the meta commentary about the plans and production of the show a part of the show, which is really smart and creative. But also, I love that they are removing that aspect of this because, like, I think that the whole, like, part of me thinks, and I don't mean to be like blasphemous here because you and I both love the show Lost, but in some ways, I feel like ever since Lost and ever since just really the advent of kind of the J.J. Abrams style of storytelling that is associated with him and with that show in particular, there's been this big emphasis on like mystery box storytelling. Like it's like, oh, okay, here's the first thing. Here are these dangling questions. What's going on? Who is that? How did we get here? And that's really fun. And I think it really hooks you when it's done well. But at some point, it's also like, man, I don't... Like, there are other ways to tell a story beyond just massive cliffhangers and really big questions and things that we can't quite understand yet, but we'll get more details later. And you and I talked during WandaVision about how we felt, on the one hand, that was a really fun part of WandaVision, like speculating week to week, and I don't want to take away that aspect of it, but on the other hand, even in real time, we felt like it was sort of pulling away from some of the other really quieter, really brilliant parts of that show that weren't so cliffhangery, and so I think it's really refreshing for them to avoid that. I mean, so far, I feel like, you know, what, halfway into the show, that's still the case. They're not relying on the mystery box formula in the same way that really, really every Disney Plus show has, even Falcon Winter Soldier to an extent.
Okay, so then my last big picture thing, based off what you said with the message kind of and the toxic masculinity that this show is commentating on.
Right.
I want to get into this really quickly right off the bat because it is important for this episode, but also for the other episodes that we've seen. And I know we're going to come back to this, okay? So this is not a full discourse at this point. And in some ways, I think, Robbie, this episode has less of it than the others because she spends so much time with Bruce. But I just want to say off the top, I actually found this message of addressing this toxic masculinity really fascinating right off the bat. And I right away knew, and I said this in my TikTok review, there is going to be a portion of people that, oh my gosh, they're going to hate this. And I think it's going to be a fascinating case study online because you are allowed to dislike the show. You are allowed to not like some of the humor. And just because you don't like it doesn't mean you're a sexist. Okay. I am not saying that at all. But Robbie, some of those people do exist. And there will be some people that will feel offended by how on the nose some of the messaging is. Lines like the douche lawyer being like, hey, I'm going to go talk to it, which I think is the only time it shows up in this episode. But this is going to be fascinating because I think there's going to be a small, small portion of people that still are that way, Robbie. Especially if right. you go online, you'll find people like this. And I think you're going to see them feel insecure that maybe deep down they know they're being talked to. And their defense mechanism is to be like, the show sucks. And I think those people are right. going to reach, they're going to reach for any topic. So they'll be like, oh, it sucks. It's not funny. This story's dumb. The visuals are bad. And they're just going to be making stuff up because deep down, I think they know it bothers them. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to step on toes, but I think that's going to happen online. And I'm going to be fascinated to see the reaction. As of right now, I haven't seen it. But you're going to get that reaction because of the messaging and because of the strong messaging of feminism and female empowerment. That being said, you brought up a good point specifically regarding a few characters' lines that I want you to bring up here so we can quickly talk about. And then again, we'll reference it in future episodes as well. But
yeah, and you know, it's one that I go back and forth on because I can see both sides. But I think for me, my initial reaction to some of those lines, like the one you just brought up, the I'm going to go talk to it line,
I think you have a good point here. I really
for me, I think that the show, and I say this is really, I mean, whenever you and I were talking, my only, if this even counts as a critique, my only critique of the show, there are moments that I wish that they had kind of been a little bit more nuanced in the way that they wrote that character and made the sexism a little bit subtler. And I get why they didn't, because it's exaggerated both for comedic effect and also, I think, for, you know, the style of the show, the fourth wall breaking. I think it's, on some level, it makes sense for these things to just be a little bit more dramatic in contrast. I don't know if there's a ton of room for the sort of nuance that I'm talking about here in this writing. Like, it's not like we're getting like an Aaron Sorkin legal drama necessarily. We are getting more of a satire, like you're saying. However, I think the only bummer for me is they're doing this messaging so well, and I really love, as someone that works in a law firm and has worked at multiple law firms and knows the kind of big law culture, they're really tackling this whole idea of being a woman, not just in big law, but in corporate America, through this lens really well, I think. I think the only bummer to me is that by making it so cartoony, it sort of gives the impression that, oh, like this is what like a sexist guy is like in the workplace. And I feel like there are going to be a ton of people, like there will be a small sliver of people that feel called out by this. And if you actually talk like this person, then I mean, clearly you should be called out by this. But there are going to be like a lot of people that I think that the show is at least trying to kind of prod that are going to see this guy and be like, oh, like,
I'm not as bad as that. So
yeah,
they're not talking to me.
Yeah. Like now that's like a tool. Yeah. I'm not that. And then it's like, but there's this kind of like sinister, subtle pandering sexism that you see in the modern workplace that I think the show like dances around so well. And I think that was the one thing that I think I was trying to convey to you is like on the writing level, it felt like if they had just really zeroed in, they could have like just had like a perfect shot at that mentality that I think is so prevalent.
Okay, a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, I think you're right. You brought up an interesting point about how, okay, they're probably exaggerating that guy to make it funny, to have it be comedic relief. But you're right that I don't particularly laugh at those lines. So then, like, if the line itself is not funny, would it have been more effective to have it be a little subtler so that the people that are that way still feel really uncomfortable because they can relate to that and it's not such a joke and you're not laughing at it anyways.
Right.
I hadn't thought of it that way. And I kind of did just kind of chuckle at it like, okay, ha ha ha, the first couple times. The second thing I want to say is this doesn't happen very much in this episode. You'll see more of it, I think, in the others. I think that's literally the only line it happens. So you're probably thinking, why are they talking so much about this when that's the only line?
The other one for me was the line about, like, you're going to listen to a paralegal instead of an attorney, where it was just like a little, like, people don't talk like that, really.
Oh, see, but as someone who knows nothing about what either of those terms even mean, I didn't know that was a sexist thing. I just thought that was like a class system. Like, that's like saying you're going to listen to a secretary. Is that what that means?
That is probably more of a classist thing. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's totally reasonable. Like, I don't know the legal side of it, but like that would happen in the touring world. They'd be like, you're going to listen to a stage manager over the tour manager? Like, that's how I took it. And that would happen. To me.
I guess that's fair. I think, and maybe that's me being naive and being like, I just can't imagine someone saying the quiet part out loud like that.
And that's my third point. Despite everything you said, and I know you know this, but the only place I'd push back is I think those people do exist still. Maybe it's a tiny faction, but dude, if you spend a little time online, you will meet some scary people with some scary ideas. And
yeah.
So I do think it happens. It may not happen in your exact circle, but I do think that happens somewhere. And maybe it's not law. Maybe it doesn't happen in law as much, but I think those people do exist.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. And I said this on the Slack earlier. I don't want to get pushback here that we're like acting like She-Hulk needs to be like Handmaid's Tale, like the message of this like super dramatic, like philosophical idea or ideal. But I mean, because it is, it's like a breezy show. It's funny. It's a superhero show. It's like a kind of classic, like fun take on like Perry Mason meets Boston Legal sort of a thing. But I'm just saying, I think that I've been so impressed by the way that it's, again, as we get further in, even dealing with some of these things in a very self-aware, very effective way, that I think these little shortcomings are, that's what I'm harping on. I think that there may be people listening that are like, I don't even care about the messaging of this show at all.
Look, it's really, really minor, and we'll come back to it. I just love bringing it up because I don't even know that I'd classify it as a critique as much as it's going to be an interesting discussion, because it didn't hit me the same way it hits you in the critique way. I wasn't bothered by it as much.
Man, you know what's also interesting on that point, like transitioning out, is as we're talking about this, I'm reminded of shows like How I Met Your Mother, which I watched in real time and was kind of really into back in the day. If you watch like early episodes of that show, like, and
there's
that was
like that.
Yeah. I mean, that was only 2005. And that was the comedic relief then, is lines like that. And maybe it's just, you know, and it's just crazy how the kind of Overton window has moved in the last decade and a half to where now it feels so unrealistic to me. But yeah, to your point, I mean, maybe we're not that far removed from that. Like, maybe there are people that stuff does feel more, one, either like it does hit on a comedic level, or two, it maybe is a lot more realistic than I'm willing to admit or ready to believe.
I am giddy with excitement. So let's get into the nitty gritty of this thing after a quick word from these sponsors. The FFWpodcast.com is a Squarespace website, and that's because from the beginning, both Robbie and I at Friends From Work have loved Squarespace. And there are a lot of reasons that Squarespace is so great, but the main reason for me is the ease of use. I knew nothing about making a website before I dove into using Squarespace, and their all-encompassing tools make the entire process so easy. Tools like their analytics, their marketing, their page setup, their commerce, and their email campaigns. Plus, you can get started with a best-in-class website template and customize it to fit your needs. Browse the category of your business to find a perfect starting place. And so, go to squarespace.com/friendsfromwork for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Again, That's code FRIENDSFROMWORK at squarespace.com to save 10% off your first purchase. And we have talked at length about our friends over at EpicHeroShop.com. And so you all already know how good of a company they are. But I wanted to tell you that our friends over at EpicHeroShop.com just dropped their brand new She-Hulk collection. They have a new t-shirt that's inspired by the glamour art of the 80s. And the rest of the collection includes a tee that reads Girl Boss in an incredibly familiar font. And you can rep the face of the superhuman law division with Epic Hero Shop's take on a juiced up law firm logo, because this summer, justice is jacked. EpicHeroShop.com is a great way to support the podcast and get some unique items you can only find at EpicHeroShop.com. I personally ordered a She-Hulk shirt that I will be receiving this week, so you'll see it on social media, and I can't wait to show that off. And so head to EpicHeroShop.com, use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save money off your first purchase, and get yourself some new She-Hulk gear. Again, that's EpicHeroShop.com, promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Robbie, holy crap. Listen, I know nothing about She-Hulk as a character other than what I'm seeing in the show. Literally nothing. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how much it was going to feel like the center of the MCU, at least the street level MCU. I could totally see this character existing for a long time and just like consistently taking cases, right? From other,
right,
like other movies and other shows. Like, this went wrong. Maybe she needs to see this case. And
right.
So like the amount of Easter eggs, like part of my excitement was just like, I've been longing a connectivity, I think. So to see Bruce, to hear him talk about his arm, to hear him talk about Steve Rogers, to hear him talk about Tony Stark, like to see them interact, like where has Bruce been? What is he working on currently? All the other little Easter eggs, like tiny things, the Captain America jokes, like I was shocked. I did not know it was going to have that much. And then, dude, a freaking spaceship from Sakaar shows up. I had no idea that would happen. I never would have guessed that we're going to tie in a Sakaarian spaceship. There's like a countless number of Easter eggs and references. I didn't know this was going to be the show where those were going to feel so natural, fun, and perfect. Sorry, I'm super pumped about it.
No, I mean, but isn't that, like, that's what we said as we were getting more, like, I think in our Comic Con episode, where we talked about this and a lot of other upcoming things, we were saying it felt like all of a sudden that might be what She-Hulk was shaping up to be. And I love, man, I love it so much. And I love, it's been this way in multiple ways as the show goes on, but here specifically in kind of an OG Avenger way, which I'm totally with you. It did my heart good. I could not stop smiling through the whole scene where Bruce is talking about Tony being there with him while he builds the lab and seeing the TS there. And, you know, Tony didn't really help. He just sat there drinking beer.
The Avengers theme?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Dude, it just felt like it reminded me in a much, much more minor way. It reminded me of what we got in Thor Love and Thunder with Jane and Thor, where it was kind of going back and filling in these things. They weren't plot holes. They weren't gaps necessarily, but it was stuff that, you know, had felt like I wanted more time and hadn't had it. And we've talked about, like, you know, getting more of a look at what Bruce was doing. And I think we were always talking about, like, from a more substantive level. But really, this is all I needed. Like, now we know that during the... This is a big thing for me, at least. During the blip, Bruce and Tony were hanging out, which I kind of love. Like, I always had the sense that Tony just kind of disconnected from everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like that he... And the reason I like that is because part of the problem... Sorry, not the problem, but part of the thing with the Infinity Saga that I think is interesting is that sometimes feels like there is such a break between the Whedon era and the Russo era, in that it's like, you know, at the end of Age of Ultron, they, like, Tony's kind of going to retire, but they, you know, it's like everyone has been so, like, buddy-buddy in that movie. When you talk about, like, the party scene and all that stuff, that you don't really get to see that much after that, especially with Bruce, obviously, because he goes up to Sakaar. But during Age of Ultron, you get so many great kind of like, oh, Tony and Bruce are bonding. Like, they're the science guys. They're hanging out. They build Ultron together. So I really love that, like, after the events of Infinity War, they wind up hanging out again. Like, there's something about that that just feels really
feels right
to me. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I like that. Like, this is how I think I would like to have some of that in-game gap filled in. Like, I don't know that I need flashbacks. I don't know that I need them to mine that and overcrowd that with a bunch of new stories. I almost would prefer them not to. I just like these little things. Like, right. Yeah, like, I think we know now this is where he figured it out. We know now kind of the impetus for that. I love hearing Bruce talk about his story as the Hulk to Jen, like his own framing of what's happened ever since the kind of Edward Norton era to now. It's just, it was perfect.
I even like the practical effect of her throwing the door and him being like, that's $1 million door, Jen, that right. I have to replace. But like, I like that, right? Because like, Tony's not around with the money. Like, who knows? Tony helped him build that. I like that a lot. And dude, like, okay, I'm way overrating this, but it brought so much joy to my heart to see a little bit of the old school Hulk shout out. Did you notice the car crash, which I thought was so dope looking, and how they filmed it with it spinning over and all that? Dude, we saw Bruce like turn out of anger again, and we haven't seen that in like 10 years. But you got a quick glimpse of what it was like for him to like lose control and like Hulk out.
That's and true. We didn't even really see that in Ragnarok.
Well, yeah, because he was already Hulk, right?
Right.
You know, the way he turns into Hulk the second time is he jumps off the bridge and it's like a funny scene, but we don't even see him turn. And I think you're led to believe that once he turns, he gets it under control. But for a second, you see him like scream and like his face take over. And you're like, dude, I haven't seen him turn since like Age of Ultron. And then also, like, this is so minor, but even in the fun scene with him and Jen as they're like working out to be the Hulk, like him throwing the rock, him knocking her off the cliff, him doing the thunderclap like she can't, was like, okay, he has some old school Hulk there. Like, he's still really strong if he needs to be. And that did my heart some good. He's totally got it under control. But this is the first time we've seen kind of that strength since Ragnarok, in my opinion.
Well, and I love... You know, like one thing that I remember bringing up with Thor Love and Thunder when the trailer came out is I was like, oh man, both of his eyes are blue. I'm excited to hear how they address that. And they kind of just didn't, which is fine. It's not a huge thing. And I think we can all just assume that Rocket probably found him an eye that matches his actual eye color or something. But I was a little worried that they weren't going to properly explain all of like the, you know, one of the big questions of Shang-Chi, which is, wait, why is Bruce Bruce again? And I love how much they went into detail and explained the device he's wearing. And then whenever Jen talks about, well, how come I can't wear that? And he explains that. It's like,
yeah, right. He's like, even if I had you for a year, it might not be exactly your blood. And like, yeah.
I love that. I love because I was asking the question during that first scene, whenever we see the car crash, like, wait, so has Hulk like never bled on another person? Like when they like has this never happened before to where it would like automatically turn them into a Hulk? But I kind of love like they even address that where it's like one.
It had to be her DNA.
It had to be her DNA. It had to happen the way it did with him being vulnerable intentionally. Like in the past, if Bruce were ever hurt in that way, he would kind of automatically change, but he's got that device on that's causing him to bleed more. It's like I love that this
right,
show.
Right, because Ragnarok, he jumps out and he turns instantly by doing that. He knows he will turn because Hulk will save him. But you're right. He hasn't even had this device, which allows him to actually feel pain, to bleed, and slowly morph into it like the old days.
Right. And you know, something else that I kind of love and just to kind of further dig into what we've always said we enjoy so much about the Professor Hulk storyline is that Bruce now has essentially figured out a way to remain Bruce, like for him. Like the thing that he always wanted, that's like always been at the core of that character, he has now figured out, and he would rather be the Hulk. Like he, you know, we see him after the transformation, like his arm's fixed, he's healed, and he's just back in Hulk form. And I could see some people taking issue with that, but I kind of love it because it gives that whole journey of his. Like we talked about Kevin Feige wanting that to be a real arc, like from Ragnarok to Endgame. And it makes that feel meaningful. Like it's not just, okay, well, this is the only thing that I can do, so I'm going to settle for kind of a hybrid. It's like, no, this is my best self. And I feel like the way he talks about being a Hulk, he talks about the struggle he went through, but he's now kind of selling it to her as like a fulfilling thing, like being a superhero.
The whole superhero dialogue. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding
me? I love the Bruce that we get here. I am annoyed by the online discourse about, we've talked about it before, the like,
he's like proud of it now. It's so good.
Yeah. I think, and oh man, I just think it wound up being the perfect adaptation of her comic origin that feels like weirdly true to the comics, but way more appropriate to the MCU. I thought it was just an excellent, excellent origin.
Here's one slight speculation thing on the Bruce front.
Warning.
So cue the warning.
Warning.
Look, this is not revolutionary, but seeing Hulk and Bruce in this way and taking into account everything you just said, it just really brought to my attention that they have an idea and a plan for this character. Or like, let me say it this way. They care about this character. Kevin and Mark Ruffalo care about the character. They're not just winging it to like wing it. I think this is the first time in a while where I have this feeling that like they may have another plan with Bruce. You know, like there might be something cooking here. I guess part of me thought like, okay, there's a world where they could have just settled into Smart Hulk and he just kind of makes cameo appearances as necessary, right? To like tie the team together, et cetera. And that's the end of the character. And now I'm kind of thinking, I don't think that's the end of the character. I think they're going to be intentional with this. Let's just see where it goes first, you know? I don't know. I'm excited again about Bruce and Hulk. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know if it will lead to him losing control and turning Hulk again. I don't know if he'll retire, if he'll die, if he'll find a way to cure it. I don't know. But I think they are thinking about it, okay? So that's more saying it to myself than anything else. But this got me excited again that this is not just a throwaway character.
So one thing that we have to address here is the fact that there is a Sicarian spaceship, and obviously that's got Ragnarok connections, but for folks that are familiar with Hulk comics, Sakaar was the planet that Planet Hulk takes place on, which Ragnarok adapted in large part. That's the kind of gladiatorial thing that we get a glimpse of there in that battle with Thor. And so it's something that has to be addressed because we've talked about what the future of Hulk will look like. And Mark Ruffalo this week said in an interview that he would love to do a World War Hulk film or project as soon as Marvel, like he said, like as soon as Marvel greenlights it, I'm there for it or something like that. So like, you know, the question is swirling around, and World War Hulk is the sequel to Planet Hulk, where Hulk there is, and again, you've seen notes of this in the MCU. In the comics, the Illuminati send Hulk out into space because they think that's the only way to stop him from being a danger to himself and to others. He winds up on that planet and winds up being a sort of a slave at first, and then breaks free and winds up essentially kind of freeing all the other slaves, and it becomes like a leader. And then in the sequel comic, winds up coming back to Earth and just wreaking havoc as kind of revenge for the Illuminati sending him off. Clearly, that's not the storyline here. You know, he went off on his own accord and all that. But the fact that Sakaar is back in the mix, what you're talking about with them seeming to have a plan, the fact that he seems, you know, like, yeah, it's not just a cameo thing. Like, they, it seems like there's a storyline happening here. There seemed like there's a reason that it was a Sakaarian spaceship, right? Like, it could have been anything that caused that car crash. And it was a spaceship from that particular place. It gets me super pumped. I'm not saying that we're going to get a World War Hulk. I'm not saying we're going to get any particular storyline, because the MCU is so great about remixing stuff. But I am really excited by the possibilities that just that one scene holds.
Yeah, let's freaking go, dude. I again, I know nothing of the comics. I just think something's going to happen here. So they're up to something.
Yeah.
They're up to something, and I'm excited about it.
They've got to be.
I think, yeah, the Sakaarian ship, that is not random. You're right. They didn't just choose that planet. Again, you could argue they chose it because he was there in Ragnarok, but there could be more there. There could be. Let's just, you know, let's keep our radar out, and then 2 years from now, we can be like, hey, remember when we kind of picked up on that?
Right.
Okay, quick disclaimer here. We ran out of time recording at the studio, so I had to drive home. So if my mic sounds a little bit different, I am not in my house, not my studio, so give me a little grace here. But that's because we had so much more to get into, and so let's keep going here, Robbie. Okay, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
I watched this twice already. We were talking about Bruce healing his arm. Is this how you perceived it? That he made that inhibitor thing to take him back to being Bruce, and it slightly was healing his arm, correct? Slightly was healing his arm.
Yeah, I think so.
But then he makes the comment that when Jen becomes a She-Hulk, he was able to use that blood of her being a She-Hulk and fully fix his arm, correct? He said, like, her blood is what solves the rest of the arm problem. Is that how you saw that? Because remember, she makes the joke of, so I'm better kind of thing?
Right, right.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
That's, I think that's right.
Down.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, she had a unique, like, I think the understanding being that they just have kind of different DNA. Like, they have, you know, obviously similar DNA because they're related, and that's what makes them both turn into Hulks. But I think that her, like, cocktail is different in a way that allows for him to kind of crack the code.
So when we saw him in Shang-Chi, his arm was in a sling, right? He was Bruce, but it was in a sling, right?
Right.
Okay, so that was...
And it was in a sling in the car crash as well, I think.
Okay, so that was somewhere in the process where he had created this inhibitor, so it allowed him to become Bruce.
Right.
But his arm was slowly healing.
Okay. Which I
That's
guess...
That's what I wanted to know.
I guess is that because, like, the snap was done by Hulk, and so whenever he reverts to Bruce, it like starts to kind of reset. Is that the?
I had not thought of that. That could totally be an explanation.
I mean, I know people will get into like, oh, that's all very convenient, but I don't know. I really like it. I like that we got to see Mark Ruffalo straight up again. I like the vibe. I like the change that you were talking about. I like the. I love how much of an extended conversation we got about his own kind of physiology and hers. And it's just like, I think that's what I love so much about this show, is it feels so MCU fan friendly and also so much more than that. Like, it feels like a show that I could see my parents legitimately enjoying, just as people that are only kind of vaguely familiar with the MCU. But I also see it as something that, like, as a mega MCU fan, I love all of these little shout outs and the emphasis on story and mythology and digging into, like, even the Captain America thing, which is clearly played for a joke, but, like, digging into the narrative of his life and, like, oh, okay, all I'm saying is he was drafted and then he immediately froze and then he came back and it was this and then it was this. And it's like, the writers know they've done their homework, you know?
Right, right. See, I'm smiling because this is so cheesy of me, but not only the shout out to his history, but it makes me happy to hear Bruce even say, "We've talked about my friend and my colleague." Like, right. Just hearing Bruce reference it in that way, though, is fun. It's like, right. Yeah, those are like the bros. Like, those are teammates. I love it. And by the way, it is funny. And that was a running joke they wanted to explore all along. Jessica Gao was talking about that in an interview, that they wanted to get that in there. By the way, as a quick reminder, every episode that we saw had a mid-credit scene. So if you don't even know what we're talking about, each one has a mid-credit scene. So don't fast forward.
Yeah, and I think
you're going to want to see those.
I think it's been confirmed that every episode in the whole series has one.
And they're totally like comic relief mid-credit scenes, but I thought all four of them worked.
They're
great.
This
one in particular was funny.
Yeah.
It's back at the bar talking about Captain America again. But dude, like, again, that's the kind of tie-in I like. You're right. It's not like they have to go back and explain everything about Captain America. I even liked her joke of, I saw it on the History Channel.
Right.
Which is amazing for so many reasons. Because one, it's joking about how old he is. Two, I love that, like, if this was real, things like that would be on the History Channel. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like knocking out so many birds with one stone. I don't know. I like it. That's the next thing I want to talk about. I thought that in this episode, their dynamic was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, there was so many fun things in the show, but right now, what sticks out to me is actually a few of the more, slightly more heartfelt moments. Like, one of my favorite moments of the whole episode was right before they fight as Hulks, was when she's kind of yelling at Bruce about, like, why would you want this for me? And at first I thought, okay, they're still kind of playing the joke thing,
right,
where she's being really mean. But I liked that she got really frustrated and was mean to him. And, like, it just felt very real, and I felt those moments. And then you had to sort through 10 years of trauma. Why would you want that for me, Bruce? Like, that was a highlight for me. And then them fighting and then making up and the dialogue there at the end where they're still family.
Right.
I don't know. Like,
no.
It's a comedy, and there were so many funny moments. But right now, what's fresh in my brain is actually the more heartfelt scenes.
Yeah. No, there are, like, layers to it. And even the comedy, I think it's so, like, sometimes in something like this, it feels insincere or incongruous to have the comedy juxtaposed with these more heart moments. But I think the fact that they're family and that they're kind of close cousins that are all, like, almost have a sibling dynamic makes it work really well, that they can flip from one to the other so quickly, because that's sort of how it is with that kind of family. And we've talked about this, because of the Universal deal with distribution, Marvel has not done a solo Hulk project since Incredible Hulk. And so we've only gotten glimpses of Bruce's psyche through Avengers projects and Ragnarok. But I love here, like I said, his framing of his own journey, I think was fun and kind of powerful from kind of the Ruffalo character's perspective. But also, yeah, like, you see that he's trying to make what he's been through matter by making it something that he can kind of impart to her. Like, and there's a level of that where he's sort of,
yes,
he's assuming a lot of things and he's putting things onto her. And I love that she comes back with, like, I'm having a totally different experience from you. She's not like a crazy rage monster. It's and like the back and forth there, where you can see where they're both coming from. And it tells so much about each of their characters. But I thought it was really, really deftly handled.
Yep. My wife actually said this to me. She said, Bruce is so lonely.
Yes. Yeah. This is the first time he has somebody that has been through what he's been through, or he thinks. And then you have to think from his perspective, there's a level of her not having to go through it, which then I think kind of accounts for some of the, like, faux hostility when they do get into the fight, because it's like he thinks for a second, like, okay, I'm going to be able to now make use of all of this trauma and kind of help out my cousin. And then for him to see her skip over all of that and basically immediately transform to the version that he had to work for like 10 years to get to. It's a layered thing. Again, this is all in the context of a comedy.
I wrote down the no alter ego scene just because that was shocking to me. I think I thought, and I didn't know anything about She-Hulk as a character, but I think I thought that she was going to still be this like rage-filled Hulk that was going to figure out a way to like tame it.
Uh-huh.
But that was still the state she was in. I didn't realize that she could just transition seamlessly for like effect and just get the powers of it without any of the downsides of it, basically. And I thought that was a really fun and surprising scene. And then, it's actually layered when you start factoring in all the things you said about Bruce. Him having the binder. And like, if you go back and watch it, Robbie, you notice that they move off her transforming pretty quickly. Like, Bruce is like, look, this sucks for you and I'm sorry, but here's what we got to do. And in my head, I was thinking like, dude, she just had like a life-altering thing. Like, let's linger on that a little more. Like, this is traumatic. She didn't maybe want to be this. We find out she didn't.
Right.
Don't just go so callous with it. But then I watched it again, and I think you're right. I think it's more layered than what I'm thinking. It's that Bruce moves off that first part because he's excited to have someone to connect with now about something. And him having the binder, him having all the rules, it's him kind of projecting like, look, I know how this goes, and it makes me feel important to tell you, right? Like, to teach you makes me feel important. And so let me teach you. And then when her experience is totally different, he doesn't know how to handle that. And I just, I love it. I loved it.
And that also, and by the way, that's kind of what, like, I was talking about how they could be a little bit more subtle in the writing. And that's it a little bit, because I love the way that they play that dynamic. Nobody's wrong. It's not like it's like Bruce being sexist or like overtly pandering, but there's a little element.
No, he's trying to help.
Yeah. But there's that element from her perspective where she's like, no, like I'm having a different experience from you. I'm handling this in a way that you weren't able to. And I like the push and pull there because I think they're both valid perspectives. And again, going back into the kind of like, whether we want to call it the feminist perspective or whatever, I think that it kind of makes all of this link, like the opening of the show with her in the office, and then it kind of looping back in. It's not like they're two totally disjointed narratives. Like, it's the same person experiencing this level of having to try to explain to someone that thinks that they know everything and are trying to explain everything to her that she actually has a better handle on it than they do.
That's a good point. Yeah, there's commentary on that level too. So it's not even just, it's like what, five layers deep at this point?
Right.
This feels similar to Thor in that we were wondering, what can they do with Bruce's story? You know, they've kind of already told a full arc. We've talked about this multiple times on this podcast. And so to see him again was not only fun, but it was refreshing for me to see a Hulk that is sad and lonely. I mean, it's kind of like Thor in that way. He's lost a ton. When you start going back, you're like, okay, Tony was like his best friend. Tony took him under his wing when no one else would.
Right.
He loses Tony. He loses Natasha as a love interest.
Uh-huh.
She's gone. You know, Captain America's gone. Thor's gone.
The Avengers are essentially gone.
The Avengers, he had kind of taken that role. And now that's gone. And so, it was just a fun take on Bruce for me. And then when you start mixing in, like I said at the beginning of this episode, the fact that he kind of raged out.
Yeah.
And then has that strength with the boulder, with the fight with Jen. I'm like, dude, this could be cool. Like, this is cool. And there could be some really fun stuff in the future. Well, and I want to briefly talk about the fight too, because I thought it was awesome. I thought it was well choreographed, and I thought it looked great.
Yeah,
it was funny.
We haven't talked about the CGI yet. in this, which
and this is what I want to say.
Yeah.
This is what I want to say. Once and for all, I said this on TikTok, I said this on Slack. Look, the CGI is good enough to never pull you out of the story and distract. It is what it is. She is a giant green person. But I was impressed. I was actually impressed with the way Hulk looked. In some ways, I thought that was the best looking Hulk we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the fight looked awesome. It was well thought out. And like I said, it was funny. And I'm already so freaking tired of the discourse that's going to happen on the CGI. We've already had some on the trailers.
Right.
Look, the CGI is good enough to not pull me out. So I'm not going to talk about it all the time anymore. I'm not. This is the end of it for me. Okay. I loved it. It's not pulling me out. And I'm not going to sit here every week and be like, oh my gosh, like this is so stupid. They should have done this and this and this. Like, whatever. It's good enough. It looks cool to me. And I'm tired of it.
I mean, you know, I'm on board with that. But this is coming from the guy that has yet to see that one scene in Age of Ultron that you're always telling me looks terrible. And I still can't make my eyes see it. So
I just like the CGI on her doesn't pull me out, and the rest of it is good. Like, I think they shot right. some of that on a beach, on an island, some of it.
Yeah.
And the show, how do I say this? The show is not about that.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, if the CGI is bad in Winter Soldier, I'm going to complain about it because it's an action movie.
Right.
Like, don't That's make it look point. Stupid in the point. Action. And it doesn't. This is like, we're complaining about the face of one character. And I'm like, it's just tiring to me. I liked the show for what it was, and I wasn't even looking at the CGI. That's what I mean.
No, I'm totally with you. And I agree. I thought that fight was super fun as a story moment and as like a
and
visual
just cool
moment.
To see a thunderclap.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and again, I just think that it's – I think that people that just want to screenshot that or Hulk doing yoga with like the Incredible Hulk – I see what
they're already trying to find ways to hate it. That's my thing. They've already made up their mind.
Right. Right. I mean, but I think I'm seeing rumblings of something really interesting there. And I think like kind of my last thought on the Hulk, She-Hulk piece of this before we move back into the kind of final elements of this episode to discuss, I think that it's really kind of perfect where we could be landing here, because I think that that arc made so much sense from Ragnarok to Endgame. We've talked about that. I think that Hulk being where he was for Endgame, the kind of conversations we were able to get between him and Tony and Natasha and Thor as Hulk, I think worked really well story-wise on a general level, but also on a character level for him. And maybe most importantly, all of that worked for us to get these moments in She-Hulk. And the result of that now is that we have him kind of as a Hulk imparting how to be a Hulk to her, because she has, like we said, the ability to basically skip ahead to the Smart Hulk version. I say all that because I think now we could be set up where it does make sense for Bruce to go in a different direction, whether that's I don't think that's just going to be him reverting to kind of pre-Ragnarok levels. I wonder if it is something deeper and more sinister, if we're going to be moving into like something more like Immortal Hulk, where there is an emerging Hulk personality that is separate and apart from Bruce and overriding. And I mean, there are a lot of great Hulk stories they could draw on, but part of me is thinking, okay, like if they hang around with this for a little bit longer, I'm not going to be upset about it. But now I'm realizing a lot of the benefits of them sitting in this for a bit. And now it almost feels like not a passing of the torch of the Hulk character, but of the Smart Hulk character, if that makes sense. To where now I'm kind of like,
it totally does.
Okay, they've got that. And that's a character I appreciate. And She-Hulk is way more fun in that mode ultimately than I think Bruce would be if they stuck Bruce there forever. And now it just makes me excited to see, okay, like there are dynamics there. There are dynamics where if he does Hulk out in some kind of unsustainable way, there could be really kind of touching, powerful moments with Jen trying to talk him down. Like I'm seeing flashes of kind of what could be just on the Bruce side based on this one episode. And I like, as someone that's, again, read a lot of Hulk comics and is a fan of the character, that's exciting to me. So it's annoying to me how many people will see these scenes or see these little bits and think like, oh man, they're nerfing the Hulk or whatever it is. When, no, I think that they're laying the foundation for some really interesting developments that I think would be way more fruitful ultimately than just us having had the same Incredible Hulk version of that character forever, which again, I've been saying this too much lately, but this weird like retroactive reclaiming of these movies that were not ever super well received is a little frustrating to me at this point. It's like the like Thor Love and Thunder, everyone was like, whatever happened to Kenneth Branagh Thor? And I'm like, that is not a movie that everybody fondly remembers as just like an excellent MCU film, and even less so The Incredible Hulk. So now that we've gone full circle back to like, oh man, remember the good old days of this Hulk movie we got with very mixed reviews? Like, okay, I'm done. But anyway, I'm very excited about the future on that particular thread, but also just in general, I think the show is making me excited in a lot of ways for the future.
Okay, one more thought on that, and then we'll talk about Jen as a lawyer to wrap this up. Yeah, that's why I think if you're just looking at it, if you're in the storyboard phase of where does Hulk go and you're writing this thing, I do think it's going to be one of two things from this point on. It's either going to be what you're saying, which is like somehow the inhibitor chip like backfires and like a very sinister Hulk is starting to seep in. And Bruce is like, how am I losing control of this now? I thought I had it all figured out. And mm-hmm. It's actually like a mega powerful evil Hulk. And that like could be one thing. Or just even in general, maybe he like hulks out more and is like, why am I hulking out? Like, this is not what it's like. I know how to get this under control. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, all the dynamics that could go with that. How do the Avengers view him? Does he end up becoming a villain like Wanda? Like, we never thought Wanda would.
Yeah,
does he end up
true.
Becoming some kind of villain where they have to stop him? Or, like you said, on a more emotional level, does Jen find a way to connect with him and get him out of that or whatever? It's either that or Mark Ruffalo is wanting to retire soon from this story, and he's passing the torch to Jen, and they could tell a story where he figures out how to cure it once and for all and essentially move off the table as any kind of superhero other than Bruce Banner can show up and be a fun character as Bruce, you know? Like, he still has the brains. He still has some personality. He's not a fixture as the Hulk anymore, and the Hulk stuff comes from Jen. I think it's one of those two things.
And I think the reason I'm leaning so much to the former is because of that quote from Ruffalo that I brought up earlier. And
yeah. Yeah. And also it should be noted that in that same article, he talked about how Secret Wars is going to be amazing. That's his words.
I saw that.
That Secret Wars is going to be as big or bigger than Endgame, which, you know, who knows? He could just be hyping it up. But like, you don't say that as someone who's hoping to get off the table soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And
so you're probably right.
There's so much interesting stuff they can do with that character. And I love, he's one of those guys I'm realizing that has the kind of level of investment that we talk about loving so much in like Tom Hiddleston, that I love Mark Ruffalo as an actor, and I love him as a person more than most actors. Like, if you follow him online, he's just like, seems to be one of the most kind-hearted, like purely good people. And so it's really fun to root for him anyway, but I also love how much he loves the MCU. And it's just
he is
like
so proud of it, dude.
And it's
he even took some shots at Star Wars. Did you see that?
No.
He literally this last week said in an article, he said, like, when you go see Star Wars, you pretty much know what you're going to get. They rerun a lot of the stuff again. But with Marvel, it's new and fresh every time. And you don't know what you're going to get. And that's what makes them so great. It was something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
Which I totally agree with, by the way. Even though, like you said, last week we had issues with some of the things that they've put out. I will say one thing you can't fault Marvel for is they're constantly trying to reinvent themselves.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, man, I love that.
He's into it.
Yeah.
Okay. The last thing I want to talk about, and then again, the reason I've waited this long to bring this up is not because I think it's a small thing. It's because the upcoming episodes, 2, 3, 4, showcase this facet way more.
Oh, yeah,
again,
for sure.
Because
we'll talk about this ad nauseum.
Yeah, so because they, in this episode, chose to do the origin story this way, where Jen does one intro delivery, and then they flash back to a few months ago, and they show you how it works. You don't see a lot of the dynamic between like her and her friend Nikki, her paralegal, mm-hmm. and what that's like being single women in the city. You don't see a ton of like LA yet and stuff like that.
Right.
And what does an LA version of this look like? Which, by the way, is kind of interesting because we haven't been in LA in a while. I know Iron Man was in Malibu.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, interesting. There's some stuff in San Francisco going on, you know, and then there's the New York faction, but it hasn't been really LA focused. So I thought that was an interesting note. Like, oh my gosh, we're in LA. Anyways, we haven't talked about that a whole lot because again, it's the next couple episodes, but the few scenes we got, I think you guys are going to freaking love the dynamic between her and Nikki. Mm-hmm. Like I thought Nikki was so much fun and she's so funny and she's a perfect balance to Jen. Jen is reserved and cares so much about her job, whereas Nikki cares but is a little more free-flowing and kind of brings the free-flowing, like easygoing side of Jen out, mm-hmm. whereas she probably grounds Nikki a little bit, right? So vice versa. And that dynamic only gets better, like I said. I think that is a huge factor into why I was instantly so turned on to this show and why like a strong feminist message in Captain Marvel can sometimes not totally be my scene. Whereas here it's like way my scene, like to the point where I wasn't even bothered by some of the things you were. My point is I love Jen playing the reluctant superhero. Like there's a difference in how she enters the scene. It's not like I'm an instant badass. We see she's a badass. And I love that discussion she had with Bruce mm-hmm. about what it means to be a superhero
mm-hmm.
and how like, that's not what I care about. I worked hard for my job. I'm not starting over. I'm not quitting my job because of this.
Yes,
thing.
That's what I was going to bring
Bruce
up.
Whereas Bruce is talking about the like, no, you have powers. You now have a responsibility. And she's like, screw responsibility. Like that, I don't care about that. And I really am a sucker for the reluctant superhero.
Well,
and the way that she then still prioritizes her job with Nikki, and again, you'll see more of it. I keep saying that. It's so good where Nikki kind of wants her to Hulk out. Like even in the first episode, she says like, well, then if it doesn't work, just Hulk out. And then when she says to her, it makes me laugh, by the way, like, okay, Jen, go ahead. Go, Jen. Like now.
Right.
Like she's like, well, now? Yeah. And she like takes her shoes off for her.
Like in front of everybody.
Like, do that thing. Yeah. Like just do it. Like it made me laugh. It's heartwarming. I'm instantly captivated by it. I like the messaging because of the tone. This to me is how you handle the dynamic. It's how you handle that message. I don't know. This was like the perfected version of what I feel like Captain Marvel was trying to do. End of rant.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think that, again, what's so interesting is that she has a point. Also, as someone that, you know, has roughly the amount of student loans that Jen has from law school, I definitely understand her point. And yeah, she's given a lot of time to this career that she cares about and enjoys. And I love that they're introducing that element because it is like, when you look back at the Avengers, it was sort of this like, oh, well, of course, they just all became heroes thing. Like, and it did. I'm not saying that was like lazy writing or anything. I think it made sense for those characters, but it also makes sense that not everybody would be like, yeah, no, I'm not. I don't want to just go like join a super team, superhero boy band, super secret boy band. That's what it was.
Super secret boy band.
I like that. That makes sense to me. And it doesn't have to be because they're like super cynical. Even it can just be because there's something else that they care about more and think that they're better at. And I love that idea. Like I think Jen is already one episode in a really complex character in that way. And like I said, all in the context of a comedy. And that's what I think makes this show so impressive. Because, yeah, Ms. Marvel could have been probably described as a comedy at points too. And again, we were super, super up on a lot of Ms. Marvel. So I'm not trying to compare those as one being better than the other. But this is like a comedy. Like it is like you said, like a straight satire at points. And that's something that I don't think we've really gotten from one of these shows. I think probably the closest we've gotten, period, would be like the Taika films. And obviously, you know, like the lawyer and me, as we get more and more of these references moving forward, there are things that I feel like particularly seen by in this show.
I love it.
That I love. And yeah, I mean, if by the way, if you're somebody that enjoys that, or if I, every now and then we get folks that write in that are either law students or lawyers, which always makes me really happy. Charles Soule wrote a She-Hulk series. He also wrote a Daredevil series. He was a practicing attorney that went to Columbia Law and then transitioned into comics writing, aka my model.
What you're trying to do.
Yeah. and he wrote these really great series for both characters. So I would really recommend those. You can get those on Organic Price Books. If you want the cheapest hard copy versions, they're also on Marvel Unlimited. But if you're watching this series, even just one episode in, and really liking that element, a lot of it's pulling from the Dan Slott stuff. And so I want to give him all due credit because he's the one that really came up with the superhuman law piece. But I think Charles Soule did that really well from a lawyer perspective.
And in the She-Hulk press conference that I attended, they referenced the Burn Run a lot as well.
Yeah.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, I do like that. And that makes sense because it's sort of like people talk about X-Men being, you know, created by Lee and Kirby, but really created by Claremont and Byrne and Cockrum. And I think it was the same with She-Hulk. She was technically created by Stan Lee and John Buscema, but I think that it was really John Byrne that came back as the writer and artist. And he's the one that introduced the fourth wall breaking, which is obviously huge here. And I think something that people kind of falsely attribute to Deadpool as introducing, and like we said a couple episodes ago, that really was She-Hulk. And I love that they're bringing that tone in so effectively.
That's another thing they brought up in the press conference. They're like, by the way, just so you all know, She-Hulk was the one that did this first. So,
yeah.
And I thought that was kind of funny.
One of the issues that we assigned in our Comics Corner episode on She-Hulk that will be coming out around the time of episode 2 is an issue where Byrne actually has her climbing out of the comics panel, which is kind of the first. That's always shown as a kind of big moment in introducing that meta idea into Marvel. And so, yeah, I think, man, this is one of those again, and I find myself saying this over and over again in this particular stint of Phase 4, but they're really giving comics creators their due in a way that makes me really happy. Like, we said this with G. Willow Wilson and Ms. Marvel. We said this with Jason Aaron and Love and Thunder. It's like they're on a little stretch right now of just really honoring some of these comics roots in a way that is not predictable because they still change things up, but feels really intentional. And yeah, I'm loving it. It's a really, really good character to used as an avenue into comics, because I think She-Hulk has some really fun ones.
All right, so She-Hulk episode one for me was a let's freaking go. And I'm not going to repeat myself because I just gushed over it for over an hour. So you can go listen to why I think that is. And I just want to say before you grade it, I think you're going to be a little lower than me on this. But I think that with this one in particular, time and a new setting may change that for you. I really do. Everything we just said applies. But you watched it in a dark room in Europe on your phone with the watermark. And it was quiet. And you were in a context of trying to, like, cleanse your mind from media in the first place.
Right.
Like,
right.
One of the worst ways to watch it possible. So then when we first started talking about it briefly on text, I was thinking to myself, dude, I think you're going to like the show even more the longer you sit with it. And I'm really fascinated to see what Candace thinks, because I think she's going to love this. Like, to me, this is Candace's scene, like 100%. Maybe I'm way off on that. And then I'm excited to see if that all adds up to a higher grade for you. So I say all that to say, I'm not trying to influence your score right now, but that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, I mean, it is funny because this whole episode, I've basically just been raving about the show. And I think my grade currently is in part, and I said this to you, and I think I maybe even said this on the Slack. Like, I do think that my first viewing was influenced by the setting, and I'm really excited to rewatch. But also, my grade is maybe a little bit influenced by my watching of the latter episodes. And what I mean by that is,
I
saw a couple of reviews to this effect, which makes me feel not totally crazy. But this is one of those shows that I'm kind of really happy to report. Like, I saw the first one and I was into it. I had a great time. And with each episode, I've been more into it. Like, it's like, it feels like it's, everything is fresh. It's settling in. Again, I think it's really benefiting from that different format and different episode structure we talked about. And
I almost wonder if it's less about the show settling in and more that sometimes the viewer has to get used to this vibe a little bit.
That's fair.
Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are things about the later episodes where it's like, it's clear what the show is. Like, I think...
Yeah, this one's different of all the ones we've seen. This is the standalone episode.
But I love it. So I'm going to give this a let's go plus. But...
Great.
But I think I am curious to see how that shifts. I mean, maybe it shifts down. Maybe I come back and watch it with Candace on the TV in the living room, and it's, you know, I have a worse experience. I doubt that happens. I think you might be right that it moves up. But yeah, I think that was about where I landed.
There's not a whole lot of room to move up. That's good.
Yeah, true. But I think what makes me so excited is for people to kind of see what the show is going to be. And I think after next week, we'll kind of be able to talk about that a little bit more, not because it's super spoilery, but just because, you know, I want people to be able to kind of see what they're doing for themselves. But that's when I think it starts to get really, really totally unique in the MCU.
Well, and that's one thing that admittedly we won't be able to judge very well. We got all four of these episodes and I watched them all in one night, back to back to back to back. So I basically binged what I had. So I don't know what this is going to be like. If this is the only episode you can see for a week, does that help or hurt? I immediately started the second one and got a vibe of like, oh, this is what the show is like. You know, this first one's different because they're telling the origin story.
Right.
But this is what it's kind of like. And yeah, I don't know. So I could see some people being like, okay, that was not what I expected for just one episode, kind of.
Well, and
but for me, because it wasn't what I expected, I was like, let's freaking go with this.
Well, and from my perspective, I watched it in two stints. So I watched one and two one night and then three and four one night. And I think that probably impacted it because I came back and I was like, oh man, three and four are a whole level up, but I had kind of a different watching experience that night. And so it's funny. This is maybe a good moment to say it's, you know, it's for people that don't watch and rewatch things as much as well, I do especially, but you do some as well. It is crazy. Like, one of the things that that teaches me is how much a setting can inform your viewing, like your mindset.
For sure.
Like, you got to get your mind right. And
100%.
Yeah, so I think it's worth, yeah, that's worth noting, going, like, especially with a comedy. Like, I think, like, if I were watching, well, like, The Other Guys, which is famously you and I's, like, shared one of our favorite comedies, like, alone in a dark room with my AirPods, I would probably not have the best Other Guys experience.
Well, and ironically, I actually think the two genres that are most affected by that are comedy and horror, right?
Yeah.
If you're watching a horror alone in a dark room on a phone, it's still going to be terrifying. If you want to argue the setting doesn't matter, put a horror movie on at like a party with 15 people and all the lights on and you're walking in and out getting hamburgers and whatever.
Right.
It's not going to be scary at all. Like, turn the volume down. Like, you'll be like, this is kind of funny, right?
Yeah, that's a great point.
I think vice versa. Throw She-Hulk on with people over and people laughing at the jokes and like commenting on them while it's going. You're going to probably think it's funnier. You know, that's just the truth of it. So I agree with you. The setting matters.
Yeah.
You know, the episodes are shorter than we're used to. So how much weight are they able to carry for a full week? You know, like, I'm interested to see that. Like, can this carry a full discourse for a week when it's just this episode?
You know,
because you and I are stoked on the whole thing, right. You know?
I think I kind of just hope that it doesn't have to. Like, I think one of the things that I love about the series is it feels, again, it's so refreshing, and that there are outlets online that make their existence by drumming up some kind of question that people have to tune in for. And so I know that, like, the stuff that we brought up about Sakaar will obviously be a thing. There will be all sorts of things that people are like, what about this? That the diehards will be super clued into. But I want to give this show the opportunity to be a fun-loving Perry Mason show, right? Like, Perry Mason, every episode, there's a new case. You didn't end an episode being like, oh my gosh, how's he going to get out of this one? Or what's the, like, secret big bad? It's like, no, we know we're going to come back next week, and it's going to be Perry Mason doing the same kind of thing with, like, a new situation. And that's really fun because we like the character.
Like,
we like the style. You know, like, yeah, like, I think, yeah, like Law and Order. I think there's something about that feels kind of bold creatively in 2022, like in an era where we've been in sort of TV as film. Like, I feel like ever since Breaking Bad, I talked about Lost earlier, ever since Breaking Bad, we've been in sort of like prestige television mode. And looking back on our conversation last week, we talked about how in that game, I think Marvel has yet to kind of figure out what that looks like. Like, I don't know that any Disney Plus Marvel shows stack up against prestige television. And that's kind of what we were getting into. But I think that whenever they start changing the formula and going bold in this way, and even like we said with Ms. Marvel, like whenever they were just going hard into like this almost like Lizzie McGuire vibe in those first two episodes, like that's when I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, this is when you're,
yep.
This is what I love about Marvel. Like, I love you coming in the same way that you like proved everybody wrong and flipped the script on the superhero movie. Like, now this is how you do that with TV. You don't try to imitate what works for other people with TV. Like, do your own thing and do it well. And that's what I think we're getting here. And I love that.
Yep. And you'll get more of that next week. I genuinely want to know what everyone out there thought of this. I'm already predicting, the episode is not released to the public, I am predicting that the critic score is going to be very, very high and the audience score will be lower than that because, one, it's a comedy, which I've said this before on Rotten Tomatoes, comedies score less high because for some people, the comedy just doesn't work, right? So like a 75 is an incredibly high comedy score. So I'm guessing that the critics are going to like it more because of the messaging and some of the uniqueness of it, like I do. I think you should avoid a lot of the toxic response that's going to happen is my guess online. But I want to know what our listeners think of this. Did it work for you? Are we crazy? I loved it, and I want to know what you think. Here's what we're going to be doing. These shows are now coming out on Thursdays, if you haven't noticed. This episode's out on Thursday because we saw this early, but we need a refresher of episode 2, 3, and 4 and beyond before we record again. So typically, I think our episodes are going to come out for a while on Fridays, actually. Give us a chance to watch it, record on Thursday night, and then new episodes on Fridays. Like I said, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are so grateful for you. And if you can't tell, we are so amped to be in a new chapter in this Marvel Cinematic Universe. We love you all out there, and we'll see you next week talking about She-Hulk Episode 2 here on Friends From Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.